Holding on Lamed Tes on the day, the 8 lines from the top, by the 2 dots. We were talking about the procedure by which Beis Din is mashbia somebody and the warning they give him about being aware of the severity of it. So we said, im oma eni nishba, if the person says, I'm not going to swear, poter notes him yad, then we immediately exempt him. Again, we discussed yesterday, Rashi says it means that we make him pay, but we make him pay on the spot, but he's exempted from the shvua. Tosfos had brought over there the possibility that maybe it means we send him right away out of Beis Din in order that it's less likely that he's going to want to come back in and change his mind and want to swear after all. And we said, but if he says, I am going to swear nonetheless, and all the bystanders say to each other, with the expression of the Pasuk, remove yourselves from the tents of these wicked people. So what do you mean, these wicked people, in the plural?
We said already.
Well, we have to discuss. We can understand the one who's swearing. If he, in fact, is swearing falsely, then he's doing an isru. Or goes Habach says, you can say on such a person, stay away from him, from such a person who's going to be swearing falsely. But the one who's making him swear, am I? What's his problem? Why are we calling him a Rasha?
The one who makes him swear,
yeah. So we have well, that's what we're asking. On the face of it, these wicked people, means that
who come to Beis Din.
No, but it sounds like we're saying in this particular case we have 2 Rishoyim over here. So what is this? So the answer is we need this in order to teach us this that it says in a Braisa, Rav Shimon ben Tarfonoma, when the pasuk says Shavuos Hashem Tia ben Shneim, the Shavuah of Hashem shall be between the two of them, between the Teveya and the Nitva, Melamed Shachola Shavuah al Shneim. This comes to teach us that the effect of the Shavuah falls on both of them. So there's a few different reasons that are given why that should be. One way of looking at it is we don't mean necessarily both of them, but we mean one or the other. Inevitably, either the guy is swearing falsely, and then the one who swore falsely is the one at fault. Or he swears truthfully, and therefore the other person knows that this is a frivolous claim, and he had no business causing a shavua to be made in the first place. Therefore, he would be the one responsible.
The one who makes him swear knowingly.
In other words, you can have 2 cases, right? You can have a case where Reuven is taking Shimon to Beis Din. You can have a case where, in fact, Shimon is prepared to swear falsely, and therefore, fine, the fault's not necessarily on Reuven, but the fault's on Shimon for swearing falsely.
So you can say...
But on the other hand, one second. But if, on the other hand, Shimon is swearing truthfully, then therefore the fault for it falls on Reuven. Why are you taking Shimon to Beis Din and making him swear when you know that your claim is untrue in the first place?
That's a different explanation.
There's a couple of different explanations over here. That's one. Another one is Rashi Tosfos talk about over here is Reuven Hananel talks about that Reuven bears a certain degree of responsibility. Reuven being the Tevea, yes, usually how we do it. Yeah. The plaintiff. He bears a certain degree of responsibility because what was he doing lending somebody who is untrustworthy, who therefore he has to take the Beis Din and make him swear? What was he doing lending him without edim, so that now there's a situation where he has to make him swear, etc.? So that's one explanation, is he bears a certain degree of responsibility, even if in the end Shimon is swearing truthfully, that he brought about the situation in the first place. But yeah, so that's one explanation. Another explanation is we don't mean that both of them. We mean it's always going to be one or the other of them as at fault, either the one who swears falsely or the one who made a false claim. That's another way of looking at it.
Certainly the one who swears falsely.
But if he swears truthfully, then it means the other one made a false claim. It means why are you making it a situation in the first place where the other guy is going to have to swear? Even swearing truthfully is not even the best thing.
And if he didn't know, that's in the case he knew, I agree.
Generally speaking, if you're taking the other person to Beis Din saying that he owes you X amount of money, it's usually because you know. It's usually because you have reason to believe. You're not just taking him frivolously, but you're taking him because you think that he owes you that money. But on the other hand, you should be more careful.
The Mishnah gives a blank statement.
But that's what, so according to that explanation, we don't mean al shnei means necessarily both of them. It means there's always going to be one or the other of them as a fault. But again, you have the other explanation, which is from Rabbi Hanano, that it means that if he swears falsely, the one who swore falsely is at fault, but also the one who caused him to swear, the Tevea, by entrusting his money in the first place to somebody untrustworthy or by not having agent. Yet another explanation is that the Sneb brings on Shulchan Aruch. Let's say Reuven knows his claim is true, But what happens now? Shimon, so what did he do? He takes Shimon to Beis Din, figuring that Shimon, once he hears that he has to swear, and once Beis Din reads him the riot act, and he realizes how serious a false shvua is, he'll say, never mind, I'm not going to swear, I'll go ahead and pay. What happens, though, the Smith says, let's say, so now Reuven sees, after all, that Shimon is prepared to swear. And Shimon knows this is going to be a false, Reuven the Tevea knows this is going to be a false shvua. At that point, he should... Reuven had a real claim. Shimon is the one who's claiming that I don't owe you the money, or I only owe you part of the money, or whatever. We're saying he has to swear. What the Smith says is, Reuven, if Shimon ends up swearing falsely, why are we saying Reuven bears a certain degree of blame when it was Shimon who swore falsely? Because once Reuven sees that Shimon is prepared to take a shavua, and he knows it's going to be a false shavua, then Reuven himself, the Tevea, should be saying, you know what, based in, never mind, I withdraw my claim. We'll work something out, Shimon and I, without him having to swear a false shavua. So therefore, they can work out however they're going to work out exactly. But the point is, Reuven himself should be willing to forfeit all or part of his claim in order to avoid Shimon making the false claim. Because look, I mean, if Shimon swears falsely, Reuven's not collecting anything anyway. So therefore, he might as well try to make some kind of arrangement rather than call that a false shavua is going to be said. So these are a number of different explanations of what it is. By the way, I forgot to mention something, an interesting thing yesterday. The Maharal says, when we said in the Gemara yesterday that a false shavua is more serious than almost any other Avera, he says in a way, therefore, so we see from, in other words, therefore, he says it's in a way more serious than Avodah Zarah. He says, why? Because Avodah Zarah is like, you're under the rulership of King A, and you rebel against him and choose King B instead. So you're not saying King A is not a king, you're just saying, I don't accept him as my king. As opposed to a Shavuot Shav or a Shavuot Sheker or whatever is the equivalent of saying, never mind any other king. I just don't accept this King A as my king at all. And that's worse in a way. But then you're saying, okay, I don't want to accept Hashem, but I accept some other power. At least I recognize that Hashem has power, but I prefer to put myself under the dominion of some other power. As opposed to like this, with the Shavuot Sheker, you're effectively saying that I don't believe that Hashem is a king at all, Chas V'Shalom. So therefore, in a way, that's worse. We said when they're mashbiya him, they tell him, be aware that's not based on your das, it's based on the das of the Beis Din and the das of Hashem. So lomali lameimra lehalchi. Why do they need to tell him this? And again, the answer, like we had previously, mishum kanya to Rava, because you want to avoid a case like the guy with the stick in front of Rava, where he handed the guy a stick, which was really full of money, and the guy didn't realize it until he broke it open. So to avoid that kind of thing, we tell them we're not being mashbiya you on your das. In other words, don't think that it depends on your understanding or you handed him the money. No, it has to be that you handed him the money in a way that Hashem knows of and in a way that Beis Din knows of. Then we said, okay, so now after that, so thus far the Braisa. So now we finished analyzing the Braisa. Now we're going to get back to our Mishnah. We said in our Mishnah, that the taina has to consist of at least two silver coins, two silver ma, and the hadah has to consist of at least a prota.
How big is a ma?
A ma is, we said yesterday, is 32 protas.
But there's no coin in ma?
There is. There's a coin in ma, yeah.
How big is it?
I don't know how big it is, but I don't know how many ounces. The Rambam says in terms of weights of barley, a ma is the weight of 16 grains of barley and a prota of silver. And a pruta would be the equivalent of half a grain of barley of silver. They didn't make silver prutas, therefore they'd be too small to use. They made them out of copper.
The weight of silver of 16 grains.
The weight of 16 grains of silver would be a ma. Right. So there's 400, and not much less than that. There's 400 odd grains. I don't know if the grains they use nowadays in Troy weight and whatever, I don't know if they're the same as the grains of barley that I'm talking about.
Ounces in Troy weight.
They use grains as well. There were 400 and some of them in an ounce. So 16. So 16 grains.
You're talking grains in an ounce.
Yeah. So they do. So 16 grains. Then you're talking the same kind of grains. You're talking about like 1/30 of an ounce. You're talking about a gram, let's say. You're talking about a gram, give or take. Okay. Fine. Okay. So Omar Rav, what we mean is like this: kfiras taina shtei kesef. What we mean is the actual denial has to amount to at least two silver mars. In other words, according to Rav, like we were talking about yesterday, it would have to be the claim consisted of at least 65 prutas, which is two mars plus a pruta, and then the denial consists of a pruta, or rather the admission consists of a pruta, and then he's denying the other two mars. But if the whole claim was only two mars, then Rav would say he's not chayav a shavua.
So it has to be at least.
It has to be that the part that he's denying consists of at least shekel.
Which is 64.
So therefore you need 64 protests plus one according to the Moida on it. Shmuel Amar Taina Asma Shtei Kesef. Shmuel says that no, all it is the Taina needs to consist of two silver mahs, so 64 protests. I feel like Kofa Elabe Prota, but I heard the Elabe Prota. Therefore, Shmuel says even if he only denied one Prota, or even if he only admitted to one Prota, either way he'd be chayev the Shvua. So in other words, again, according to Rav, you would require there has to be at least 65 protests over here, and he needs to be denying at least 64 of them. If the claim is 65, he needs to be denying exactly 64 of them. According to Shmuel, no, the whole claim only has to be 64, and any part of that he denies, as long as he's denying at least a prota, or as long as he's admitting to at least a prota, he will be chayav a shvua. Amar Rava,
there could be more than that.
Obviously, it can be more than that. Yeah, you could hit a typical claim might be in hundreds. It might be hundreds of dollars, but yeah, those are the minimum amounts. Amar Rava, Deka Masnisin Kavasei de Rav. So Rava says the wording of the Mishnah is more precise according to Rav. Okroi Kavasei de Shmuel, but the wording of the Pesukim is more precise, fits more precisely with Shmuel's opinion. Now, obviously, Rav and Shmuel are not going to disagree with the Mishnah, and obviously, they certainly can't disagree with the Pesukim. So each one is going to have their way of understanding, of interpreting the Mishnah out of understanding the Pasuk. What we're saying, the simple wording of the Mishnah fits better with Rav's opinion, the simple wording of the Pasuk fits better with Shmuel's opinion.
That's a problem.
No, well, it's not a problem, it just means
Mishnah doesn't fit the Pasuk.
No, well, what it means is, so we'll see. Deka Masnisin Kavasei de Rav, the wording of the Mishnah more precisely fits with Rav's opinion, to Katani, because the Mishnah had said, HaTaina Shtei Kesef Bahai Da Shava Prota, because the Mishnah had said that the Taina has to consist of at least two silver coins, and the Haida has to consist of at least a Prota, the Ilu Kfir of Taina Prota like Katani. The Mishnah did not say anything about that the denial has to be at least a Prota. So according to Rav, that's true, because according to Rav, the denial of Prota is not enough. It has to be denial of two silver coins, two mahs.
The full amount of the
well, not the full amount. Again, according to Rav, what you need is the claim has to be two mahs plus a prota.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in other words, the denial has to be 64 out of those 65 protas. Two mahs out of two mahs and a prota, right? So the Mishnah did not say anything about that if you deny only a prota, you will be chayav a shavua. That fits better with Rav. According to Shmuel, you would be chayav a shavua in that case. Utnan Nami, and we, for that matter, we find a Mishnah elsewhere. In Bav Metzia, we had a list over there of five things in Halacha where the minimum amount for them is a Prota, and one of them is Haidah B'Prota. One of them was that the minimum admission for the person to be a Modi B'Mitzvah is a Prota. The Ilu Kfira B'Prota, like Atani, it didn't mention in that context that also the minimum Kfira has to be a Prota. Again, that fits better with Rav. Because according to Shmuel, you should have said that a Kfira can also be a Prota and Halach to swear, as long as the total claim was two mahs.
According to Rav, the kfira has to be
two mahs. So therefore, it makes sense that they didn't list it in Bava Metzia over there, because the minimum there is not a prota. The minimum for Haidah is a prota. Again, the part that he admits, I do owe you a prota, but I deny that I owe you another two mahs.
Right.
Another two mahs, right. So that's the kfira part. According to Rav, the kfira part is not a prota. The kfira part is 64 protas, two mahs. Yeah. So the Mishnah fits better with Rav's opinion. Ukroi Kavasei de Shmuel, on the other hand, Psukim fit better with Shmuel's opinion, because the pasuk says where b'chlal do we learn the whole concept of modu mitzvah? It says like this: in the case of shomim, to yitzim isha re'ev kesef hakelim lishmor. The pasuk says if a person gives to his fellow to his fellow yid kesef, which kesef can mean silver or it can mean money, hakelim or utensils lishmor to guard. Why does it mention kesef and kelim? Ma kelim shnayim, a kesef shnayim. First of all, we learn by the fact that it says kelim in the plural, that just like kelim, the minimum has to be two. Just like kelim, the minimum has to be two, because mute rabim shnayim, the minimum plural, although it's two. A kesef shnayim, so also the kesef, the silver, that silver coins, that is, has to be a minimum of two. And so now we have to ask how much. I mean, you have various denominations of silver coins. You have silver coins less than a mark. But my kesef, double kosher, I call double kosher. Just like kesef is something important, something that has something that has a significant value, I call double kosher. So also, it has to be that whatever else we're talking about, that it has to be something kosher.
One kosher, like silver and gold.
Well, so no, it doesn't have to be necessarily like silver or gold, but no, it still has to be. So when it comes to kesef, so Rashi explains the Chachamim figured out that what is the least amount of silver that can be called kosher is a ma. Any silver coin smaller than that is not really considered kosher.
And a ma again is
a ma again is the weight of 16 grains of barley. Again, like about one grain. But a Chachamim figured out that that's the least amount that can be considered a significant amount of money. The prices have also gone up since then. I mean,
not compared to then, compared to today. No.
Okay, but again, a pruta in those days would buy you a lot. These days, a pruta buys you these days.
Nothing.
Well, it depends. That's part of the question is how do we define a pruta? Do we define it in terms of the actual weight of silver, in which case it would come to 2 or 3 ounces, or do we define it in terms of purchasing power, where the least expensive thing that you can buy pretty much any place nowadays is something worth 10 cents. So therefore, 10 cents would have to be a pruta. Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, I think I've mentioned before that, for example, the Mishnah and Me'ilah that talks about, for example, buying a couple of fruits for a pruta. So a pruta went a lot further than it does now. Anyway.
Cannot buy it today.
That's the point. So, of course, it went a lot further in those days. Okay. So, ach kol davar kosher. So, also, whatever else we're talking about, that there's a moedah mitzvah on has to be something important. Now, Rashi brings a gusa that existed that not kol davar kosher, but kalim davar kosher. So, Rashi says can't be, because we're going to say later on men on the day that it's enough, for example, you can have a case where a person deposited two needles with somebody and he denies one of them. Needles are very tiny things. They can't really be considered a double choshev. So we're not saying the kalim has to be a double choshev. We're just saying whatever it is that we're talking about. We're not talking about gold needles, but some other rishonim answer that we can still keep that girsa, because for what they're useful for need, when you need a needle, then yeah, it's worth something. Intrinsically, it's only worth a few cents, but when you need it, then it's very valuable. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Now.
My father gave some German captivity
needle. There you go.
She made a
compass. Now, the Ka'omar Rachmana, who's that? Now, the Torah continues that when you have this claim about the Kesef of Kalin, the Pasuk says that he comes to Beis Din and says, Ti who's there? He says, this is it, meaning he's only murdering this stuff. He's saying, this is it that I owe you, nothing more. That's where we learn the whole concept of Shmuel. Therefore, we see from that, Shmuel says that that all you have is the total taina has to be shtei kesef, has to be two mal. The moedah mitzvah can be part of that, any part of that. So therefore, that fits better with Shmuel. As long as he's moedah some part of that two mal and denied some part of it, that he's chayav shvuah, as opposed to, again, according to Rav, that you would need more than two mal for the original claim, you need two mal for the pruta. So therefore, the pesukim fit better with Shmuel's opinion.
And Shmuel says you need.
So Shmuel says, always indeed, the total claim is two ma, and whatever, as long as he admits at least a kripta, or denies at least a kripta, then it's chayav shvuah. So yeah, so that fits better with the puzzle. Okay, so Rav, what would Rav answer to that? He would say, Ahum v'bodeh lo hagav mitzvah t'taina. Yeah, but we need that we need that puzzle to teach us the basic concept of moedah mitzvah. You do have to have, Rav says, that the Hajar has to be on a pruta, and the Kfira has to be on at least two ma. The reason why it says in the Pasuk over there, Kesef or Kalim, from which you're learning two ma, that teaches you that the Kfira has to be at least two ma. Not that the total claim has to be at least two ma.
Okay, the
total claim has to be more than two ma in order that the denial can be of two ma. Rav is saying that's how I'd learn the pasuk. When he says, in other words, when we say ki who's there, he's saying that I admit that I owe this, namely a pruta, but I deny two silver mars. So we need the pasuk is teaching us that you have to be denying two silver mars. Not like you say Shmuel that you need less than that. Okay, Shmuel. What would Shmuel answer to that? He says ki who is there. Yeah, but you have two different words in the pasuk. You have who, which means it, and you have zeh, which means this. Therefore, the ikos of the mitzvah for Odin mitzvah, that it means that he's admitting part of it. He's saying this is it, but he's total on part of it. He's moedah on part of it. Then he's chayav. So therefore, again, since the pasuk starts off by saying kesef aitelin, and we're saying kesef means two silver coins, then it means the total claim is two silver coins. And within that, ki hu zeh, he's admitting part and denying part. Again, that according to Shmuel. So that's not Shmuel. We'll understand the pasuk. That ki hu zeh is referring to the original kesef that we're talking about. So therefore, the whole kesef, the whole kesef is the tuma, and within that, you have a hu and a zeh. The Rav, what would Rav answer to that? He would answer, yes, but the two words in the pasuk, chad lo hajab mitzvah tachayna, but chad lo hajab mina tachayna. Yes, but they teach us two different dinim. One is that it has to be modu mitzvah, like we were saying, but the other word, you're using the two words to hu and zeh to both refer to the sfira and the hajar. That as long as he's koyfer on part and modu on part, no, you need one of those words to teach us to part hajam and minataina. That as we said in the Mishnah, what you're admitting to has to be of the same type of thing as what was claimed. It can't be that he claimed chitim and you're counterclaiming sorry.
So you need two words.
You need the word who to teach us modim mitzvah, and then the word zeh to teach us modim mitzvah has to be within the same type of thing. So I don't have any pasuk available to teach us that the total amount is only going to be two silver marks. It's only going to be two marks. That was Shmuel, and what would Shmuel answer to that? He would say, lav me'me l'sham inay b'chotzer. Lav me'me l'sham inay. Fine, but don't you think that you can see that automatically from that very pasuk itself, d'chotzer l'taina. The very fact that you have these sukkim shows that you have to have that. Otherwise, if you don't have that amount, then you're missing from the original taina. So in other words, looking actually, the lav memela, that's a middle over here. The lav memela shamit, you know, the chosul taina, the lav tachin, and the question is on Rav. True, the two words who and there teach us that you need to be modu mixed, and that has to be of the same type of thing as the taina. Mihu, nevertheless, lav memela shamlina. Don't you automatically learn from that also the chosul taina the shoina, that it means that if there's going to be missing anything from the original taina, the ain kind of kfira mistake that. If you don't have a kfira on two, on two full silver coins, nevertheless you're still chayav, because you still have Shmuel says after all the pasuk again begins by saying kesef okelin, doesn't say anything about kesef pasuk kesef. So therefore, automatically, therefore, yes, the word who and they are teaching us the details that you have to have motive mixer, but then motive mixer itself implies that. He started out with a claim of two mars, and the guy is denying part of it and admitting part of it. And you see that he still has to take a shavua. So not like you got with a full denial has to be on two mars.
Part of the denial.
It's enough. It's a denial. It's on part of the two mars. Because you got are saying the word who and there teach us separate dinim, nothing to do with the amount of nothing to do with the amount. But nevertheless, Shmuel says the very fact that the prophet began by telling us kesef, okay, let me mean two mars of silver, and we're saying ki hu zeh, that he's moda mixer, that itself implies he's moda part of that, he's moda within part of that two mars. So you don't have to have that you have two mars that he's being kosher, like you say that. It's enough that he's being kosher on part of those two mars. You see that from the pasuk itself, from the structure of the pasuk. Okay, so then in that case, so that's a very good question. So in that case, what would Rav answer to that? That is it. Shmuel has a very good point then. In that case, the pasuk's not saying anything about truth at all. So where is Rav getting it from? Ever on the luck Rav? No, Rav will tell you like this. You're assuming, Shmuel, that the word kesef comes to teach us the amount of the taina. And therefore you're saying, so as long as you have a taina of shtei kesef, then the hajar can be part of that, the sphere can be part of that, and the chayav shmuel. No, Rav will answer instead, kesef, ki also me'ikra, where originally when the pasuk starts by saying the word kesef, it's not referring to the amount of the claim, look, sphere who da'asa, also it's telling us the amount that he's in koyar on. The im came, because otherwise, otherwise, the pasuk could have just said that a person gives to somebody else kalim in the plural to God instead of mentioning kesef by kalim. But I know I'm mina, and we would automatically figure on our own. My kalim shnayim, my kol shnayim. Well, that if kalim is in the plural, then anything else that you give him also has to be in the plural. So therefore, the taina can be two silver coins. Kesef to kasev rachmana lomali. Why does the Torah activate the word kesef then? If we could have deduced it from kalim. in the taina, the Rav will say, therefore, you don't need it to teach us the amount, the minimum amount of the taina, because you can deduce that from kelim, that it means there has to be a minimum of two. Yeah. Tineu inyan l'kfira, then therefore apply it to the kfira. Therefore, Rav will say that's the basis on which I'm saying that the kfira has to consist of at least two silver coins. The fact that it said kesef and kelim. When it didn't have to say kesef, we could have derived it from kelim. Okay. Well, Shmuel Amalach, what will Shmuel answer to that?
He'll say he calls it Rachman a kelim, like calls it kesef. Yes, but if the Torah only wrote the word kelim and did not write the word kesef. Have on minus, you would think, okay, my kalim shnaim, my kol shnaim. Fine, you would think kalim means two, anything else is two. I will double kosher loibinim. We wouldn't necessarily realize, though, that means that you need something important. The same way, again, as like kalim, that you say that even two needles, it's enough that he admits one and denies the other one. The same thing you would say, let's say a keset, maybe it's to mean two, it can mean two from yonim or two sorin or whatever, smaller silver coins. You would think, therefore, that there's no minimum amount of money. Well, that is why the pasuk has to write kesef. We're therefore we learn that kesef intrinsically is a double kosher, and therefore it has to be that the actual coin of kesef itself is a double kosher. So Shmuel will say therefore that you can't take out the word kesef from context, doubting about the kira, because otherwise if you didn't have the word kesef there, you wouldn't know anything about double kosher at all. Therefore, you have to keep it in context, and therefore it means that the actual claim has to be on shtei kesef. That's the whole job, and let's hear it from Yama.
Okay.
What's
the
halacha like Shmuel?
Usually in Dinim Amanes, the halacha would be like Shmuel. However, over here, pretty much all of the Rishonim say that the halacha is like Yam. Because later on, we're going to see later on as we go through the discussion. Okay. Fine. Tanan. Okay, so now let's look at our Mishnah and see which of these two opinions we can make our Mishnah work better according to. We did say the Mishnah fits better according to Rav, but nevertheless, Shmuel again can't disagree with the Mishnah, so he's going to have some way of answering it. So now, when you said in the Mishnah, Shtei Kesef Yesh L'Yotza, we have Reuven claim you owe me two silver coins, two mars, and Shimon counterclaims Ein L'cha B'yad Yad Kutza, I only owe you a Kutza, he said he's false. My timer. Now, why would it be possible in a shvur? Lav mission the chosu of a taina. It must be because a taina is not enough. Again, according to Rav, you need 2 mars plus a kutta. According to Shmuel, a taina of 2 mars should be enough, as long as, and then an admission of a kutta. What's your kutta Shmuel? Therefore, our mission would contradict Shmuel. The answer is Amalach Shmuel. Ni sabret shavat atom. No, you're thinking that when the Mishnah says shtei kesef, you're thinking that the Mishnah means the value that he's claiming the value of two silver mars. No, davka katani. What the Mishnah means is he's actually saying you owe me two actual silver coins. In other words, there could be, we're going to discuss in the sugya over here, there could be two different ways. When one person says to the other, you owe me X amount, it can mean that he's talking about the monetary value, or it can mean he's talking about those actual coins themselves. So he can be telling him, in other words, you owe me the... So for purposes of the question, we assume that he's saying you owe me 2 ma'a in the sense of you owe me the value of 2 ma'a. Now, that 2 ma'a could be paid as 2 ma'in. It could be paid as 64 kutas. It could be paid as a combination of a small currency, whatever the equivalent, whatever it is that would equal up to that. Shmuel is answering that, no, the Mishnah is dafka katani, that he's saying that literally he's saying you owe me a certain amount of silver, and the other guy is counterclaiming I owe you a kutta, which is a certain amount of copper. Therefore, it's tarnish, it's a dog. So Shmuel would say that when the Mishnah says, the case when the Mishnah says, shtei kesef yesh l'yotza, and the other one answers, ein l'cha b'yad yad kutta, does not mean shtei kesef in the sense of the value of two solar coins, two solar mars, it means two actual solar mars. And the other guy is counterclaiming, I only owe you a copper coin. Tonic, which I'm already deciding. Counterclaiming a different thing, then it's not meaning I find it. It's not the same kind of thing as he's finding on.
Yes,
so Rav doesn't need that. Rav can just say straightforwardly. The reason, no, Rav would say you don't need to define the Mishnah like that. You can say those straightforwardly. The Mishnah means he's saying you owe me the value of 2 mars, 64 kutas. The other guy says I only owe you 1 kutta. Therefore, he's denying 63 kutas. According to Rav, you need to deny all 64 kutas. But Shmuel, who doesn't hold of that, would have to say that the Mishnah is talking about actual silver versus actual copper. Therefore, Mashatane lehoydeloi. Therefore, what Reuven claims Shimon is not admitting to, because he's not saying I owe you silver at all, or Mashatane lehoydeloi, and what Shimon admits to, Reuven never claims copper. And the question is, if you're going to learn the Mishnah like that, in the Sefer, look at the next part, where he said, Shnei Kesef HaKrusa Yesh LeYasa, where Reuven says, you owe me 2 silver coins plus a Krusa, and the other one answers, Ein Lecha B'yadi Yad Krusa, all I owe you is a Krusa. We said he's Chayev HaShavua. Why? Masha Tane Lehoi Deloi, or Masha Hoi Deloi Tane. Why? I should say the same thing. Claiming silver is counterclaiming copper. The answer is Midihu Taima Elo Shmuel. What are you trying to find the explanation of the Mishnah for? You're trying to answer Shmuel's opinion. Well, Ha'amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. Well, we find that Rav Nachman himself says, that Rav Nachman says in the name of Shmuel himself that you have a different case. Tane Chitin is Odin, Behoi Deloi Be'echa Man Chayim. If Reuven claims you only wheat and barley, and Shimon counterclaims that only owe you one of them, he will be Chayim Shmuel. So what do we have over here? He's saying you owe me 2 Mars, which are silver, plus a prusa, which is copper. Therefore, saying it says wheat and barley, and he says, I only owe you barley. So therefore, the same thing here, saying all I owe you is copper. But copper is included in the original payment. If we were trying to figure out somebody else's opinion, we'd have a question. But since we're talking Shmuel's own opinion, Shmuel is being consistent with his own opinion. He understands that a case like that, you actually would be Chayim, even if you're talking about the actual coins, not the value of them. So therefore, Shmuel can say very well, that's why I'm initially the Chayim in that case. Actually, it seems logical to understand the Mishnah that way, the way Shmuel was saying. Because the next part of the Mishnah continues, so we have the case where the one person says, "You what? A litra? It's a weight. It's vaguely somewhere near 10, but I'm not real sure about that. You know, the Rambam defines it as 35 dinar. Sorry, if I remember correctly. Okay, whatever. Roughly speaking, I think it's about a pound. Yeah. Oh. So, Reuven says you owe me a litra of gold, and Shimon counterclaims, Ein lecha b'yadi ela litra kesef, all I owe you is a litra of silver, potter. So then you say it's potter, because they're 2 different types, gold and silver. So, if you're going to say that throughout the Mishnah, and therefore in this case also we're talking about that he's talking about the actual material, gold versus silver versus copper, etc. Well, Mishnah Mahal Kapapa, that would explain why he's Kapapa. It's not by Dom, you mean not find it. Eli, I'm a Shabbat, but if you were going to explain the Mishnah, as we figure it out to explain the Mishnah, that we're talking about the monetary value, am I Kapapa? Why should he be Kapapa? Litra to Rabi, a litra is much more than 2 mars of silver. So you have a big enough tiner, you have a big enough Hajar, so why should he be Kapapa? Elam is a safe adapter, so we must say that since the end of the Mishnah, since that case of the litra is talking about, he's actually talking about it, you actually owe me gold, not just the value of it. Reishanami Daska, well, in the earlier cases, he's not supposed to be talking where he's talking about the actual metal rather than the value. Well, if we understand it that way, Lema Tevis, you're figured out. Should we say, if we understand the Mishnah that way, that now we have a spear against Rama? Rishonim talk about it, not necessarily, I mean, we don't have to say that. Because after all, Rav can say, okay, different parts of the Mishnah are talking about different cases. One is talking about where he's claiming the monetary value, and the other one's talking about where he claims the actual metal. So it's not really a tshuvta. It's not a complete upshlag. A tshuvta would be like where there's no coming back from it. So the Ritva says, okay, so maybe the Gemara is using tshuvta over here in a looser sense. It's a kasha on Rav, but not necessarily an unassailable question. Anyway, Omalach Rav, so Rav can answer you. No, Kulamas Nisin Shava, no. The entire Mishnah, the case of the Tumah plus the Trutta, is talking about where he's claiming the value. Therefore, it has to be, again, that the value that the other guy is denying is 2 Mars or more. The Litra Zahav Shiny, the difference of the case of the Litra Zahav is a different situation, because a Litra is a measure of weight. It's a measure of weight. It's not a measure of value. So therefore, when he says a litra of gold, it's weight. So therefore, when he says a litra of gold, he must actually be talking about the actual weight of gold, therefore the material. So therefore, again, the other guy counterclaims, I only owe you a litra's weight of silver, then we can't say we're talking about values. We have to say we're talking about intrinsic amounts.
So gold, of silver, anything.
He says you owe me a litra of gold, and the other one says I only owe you a litra of silver. But it means a certain weight. It means a certain number of pounds of gold, right. So there we could say that it means that he's talking about the actual, that he's talking about the actual metal itself, X
right.
amount of gold or X amount of silver, as opposed to the other cases in the Mishnah where we're talking about that you only shtei kesef, or shtei kesef plus a proto or whatever. It's more logical to understand that he's talking about the value of it.
But
it's not so stretched because, again, a litra is a measure of weight. It's like, it'd be
the
equivalent. One second. It would be the equivalent of you could have Reuven saying to Shimon, you owe me $5, and Shimon's counterclaims and says, I only owe you $1, versus you could have Reuven says, you owe me a pound of nickels, and the other, and then Shimon counterclaims, I only owe you half a pound of nickels. So in one you're talking about the actual, in one you're talking about the values, in the other you're talking about the actual weight. The word the litra itself is a weight. It's not a unit of value, it's a unit of weight.
But then he should always talk.
No, because the Mishnah is told, giving us different scenarios. Some of them where he's claiming monetary value, and then according to Rav, the minimum amount of the kfirah has to be 2 mas. He has to be kofar on at least 64 prutas worth. On the other hand, if we're talking about weights, if we're talking about the actual metal itself, then it's not. Then we don't look at monetary value. Then we look at, is he counterclaiming something which is different than the original claim? And again, according to Rav, Shmuel will agree with the underlying premise, which is that when you're talking about monetary values, if he says you owe me 2 mas, if he says, for example, you owe me 5 mas, and the other guy says I only owe you 1 mas, we're both according to Rav and according to Shmuel, you have enough to be moed and mikdas. There's no question that if the other guy counterclaims and says I only owe you a pruta, there's no question that he would be chayev because a ma and a pruta are both different kinds of coins. We said that in the Mishnah. The question is, in the two cases, you have three cases in our Mishnah that are relevant to our discussion. One where he says you owe me shtei kesef, one where he says you owe me shtei kesef and a pruta, and one where he says you owe me a litra of gold. So the question is, are all three of those talking about weight, about the actual metal? And in that case, then that's how Shmuel would understand it. Therefore, he would say, like this. In the first case, he's potter because he's claiming silver and the other guy's counterclaiming copper. In the second case, he's chayev because he's claiming silver and copper and the other guy's counterclaiming copper. In the third case, he's potter because he's claiming gold and he's counterclaiming silver. Rav, rather, would say the first two cases are talking about monetary value. So in the first case, he's potter because you don't have enough monetary value for the kfira. You need 2 mas for the kfira, and he's only being kofar on 2 mas minus a pruta. The second case, he's chayev because he's being kofar on the monetary value of 2 mas. The third case is possible because there we're not talking monetary values anymore. There we're talking about weight. And there you have the gold, because you have gold versus silver. He's claiming a weight of gold, and he's counterclaiming a weight of silver.
That two are expressed mas.
No, because the very fact that the first two are expressed in terms of mas and prutas, and the third one is expressed in terms of litras, shows, as Rav can say, it shows that we're talking about two different cases.
Yep.
Whereas Shmuel doesn't have to accept that. Teda, in fact, Rashi says, I can prove to you, Teda, Rav will say, I can prove to you, in fact, that the rest of the Mishnah is talking about monetary value rather than weights of gold or silver or whatever,
says Rav.
The Katani Sefer, because the Mishnah continues, you have the case where the one person says, Dino Zahav Li Biyadcha, you owe me a dinar of gold, and the other one counterclaims, Ein Lecha B'Yadi Ela Dinar Kesef, all I owe you is a silver dinar, or Tresis, which is a small ma, or Pundion, which is a half a ma, or Prota.
So that's true.
Or Chayev, he's Chayev in all those cases. Shakol Min Mafeya Hasein, because coins are all considered to be the same type of thing, because money is fungible. So,
yes,
right.
They're different in terms of
that's the point. If you're going to say, Rav says that the Mishnah, most of the Mishnah is talking about monetary values, and therefore this case is also Mishra Machi Chayev. That would explain why he's Chayev, because he's Kofer on the value of at least 2 mas. Because a gold dinner is worth much more than 2 mas, and the other guy is counterclaiming, I don't know, you a silver dinner, or a tresis, or a punyan, etc. So therefore he's denying at least two mas, so therefore we're good. Eli, I'm a davka, but if you're going to say, you, Shmuel, are saying that throughout the Mishnah, we're not talking about monetary values, we're talking about the actual gold or silver or copper itself, am I chayev? Why should he be chayev? He's claiming gold, the other guy is counterclaiming silver or copper. If it's talking about actual metals, then it shouldn't fit. Therefore, he should be potter, and yet the Mishnah is saying he's chayev. So therefore, Rav says that itself proves that we must be talking about monetary values. Well, once we're saying that that part of the Mishnah is talking about monetary values, we can say the rest of the Mishnah, wherever it talks about Shtei Kesef and Prutah and whatever, is also monetary values. Not like you, Shmuel, want to say that, that some of them are talking, some of the litra, okay, litra is a weight. That for sure has to be talking about, but because he expressed it in terms of a litra. But the other ones where he says, where he says ma, where he says Shtei Kesef, where he says Prutah, must be talking about monetary values.
It would make sense in a way that you could talk first about monetary values and then about amounts.
Yeah. Okay. So what's the answer to that?
Amar Rav Elazar.
So Rav Elazar will answer. V'shatarnet b'dinyum
matbeis. Shmuel doesn't answer that.
Well, Shmuel doesn't answer, but Rav Elazar is going to answer it. Actually, so Rav Elazar is not really answering directly on Shmuel. Rav Elazar is making an independent statement, which is going to lead the Gemara to ask in a minute whether he actually agrees with Shmuel.
But what would Shmuel answer to that?
We don't know what Shmuel would answer, but Shmuel could answer, I guess. Shmuel himself might answer, okay, you have different cases in the Mishnah. Some of them are talking about weight. Some of them are talking about monetary values. For sure, the Dino Zahav case has to be talking about monetary values, Shmuel would say, but the other ones, not necessarily. Okay, Omer Rav Elazar, but Rav Elazar gives an answer that the case of the gold dinner in our Mishnah is B'shatane B'dinner Matveis. The case is that he is the case of the, where he says, you owe me a gold dinner, and the other one answers, I only owe you a silver dinner, or I only owe you a traces, etc. What the case is, that he's saying, you owe me a stamped gold dinner. In other words, we're not talking about, again, we're talking about monetary value. I lent you a gold dinner, a coin which actually circulates with the value of a gold dinner. So he's not talking about weight. He is definitely talking about monetary value, and that's what the Mishnah is saying. Therefore, the Kamash Malon, the Prutah B'Chlal Matveis. Therefore, the Chiddush of the Mishnah. Therefore, is that a Prutah is considered in the same category as coins.
He's not talking about.
Rav Elazar is explaining like this. The chiddush of that part of the Mishnah is that the case is when he says dinner zahav libiyacha, he doesn't mean the weight of a gold dinner. He means an actual coined gold dinner, which has therefore the circulating value of a gold dinner. The other guy counterclaims, for example, I only owe you a prutah. So therefore, the chiddush.
Does that mean a real prutah?
No, it means an actual. It means the value of a prutah. The point of it is that a prutah can be considered a coin for that purpose as well. Even a prutah is considered enough of a hadah that therefore he's going to have to swear. Now, Tosfos and a lot of the other Rishonim have a couple of problems with this explanation of Rashi, because first of all, what's this expression b'shatane b'dinu matbeis? What does that mean? That you're using coined money? Of course, when you claim a dinar zav, usually that's what it means, coined money. And what's the chiddush that? And second of all, what's the chiddush that a prutah is enough to be a hadar? We said in the Mishnah, a prutah is enough to be a hadar.
In other words, we know all this already.
We know all this already, basically. Yeah. So Tosfos and many other Rishonim explain that when Rav Elazar says b'shatane b'dinu matbeis means
just a cup.
So the Rimi Gash says something along those lines. He says the chiddush of to answer Tosfos' second question, what's the chiddush that prota is enough to be a hadar? He says the chiddush is because protas very commonly get worn out. They would usually be stamped in the first place, but they're circulated so heavily. And they're copper, which is a soft metal, so they wear out very fast. And eventually, you barely notice.
They still call them a prutah.
Nevertheless, that's the point. The chiddush is that they still call the prutah in that case. That would be the chiddush. As far as the first part, though.
Otherwise, there's no
chiddush.
We know that.
Right, exactly. That's Tosfos' point, yeah. As far as the first part, for Shatana B'dinu Matveis, the Tosfos and a number of other Rishonim explain that what Rav Elazar meant is that he says, I gave you a gold dinner because I wanted you to make change from it. I wanted you to take that gold dinner that I'm giving you and go make change from it and bring me back the change. The other guy answers, I gave you all the change except for a silver dinner or except for a traces or except for a punyan, etc. So that's the case over here. We're not talking that he just says, I gave you a coined gold dinner, which has the value of a dinner. There's no particular chiddush in that. Rather, the Mishnah is making it clear that was, the Mishnah here is clearly talking about a case where it's monetary value. Even again, even Shmuel would have to agree that in our, that in this part of the Mishnah we're talking about monetary value, and therefore and Rav Elazar therefore stresses that by saying, he's saying, I didn't just lend you a gold dinar where therefore now you have like a nice looking coin around your house or whatever. I lent you it because of its value, because I wanted you to make change and bring me back the change. So it's not even lending, in other words. I gave you a gold dinar to run an errand for me and bring me back the change. And the other guy says, I returned it all to you except X amount. So we're saying he's a Moedim Mitzvah.
So Rabbi Elazar is saying...
So Rabbi Elazar is saying that that case of the Mishnah, Dinar Zahav, Libi Yodcha, is not necessarily like the previous cases where you're saying, I lent you X amount of money, and the other guy counterclaims that you only lent me Y amount, or I paid back, or whatever. Here we're talking about that L'Hatchila gave it to him in order to make change. And they're saying, so where's all that change? Where's the total change adding up to a gold dinar? And the other guy answers that I gave you most of it already. And he's claiming that I gave you most of it already, but I still owe you a silver dinar, or I still owe you a tresis or whatever from the change.
So what is Rabbi Elazar trying?
That's Rabbi Elazar. That's the point. Become mashmal on the pruta machlama peis. The chiddush of that part of the mission, therefore, is that a pruta is considered one of those coins as well. Given the Rimigash's point that even though copper coins prutas are very heavily circulated, and not only different metals, we said doesn't matter. But the different metals we said previously in the Mishnah doesn't matter. Shakol min matbeachas. Well, actually, that part of the Mishnah itself says shakol min matbeachas. Saying they're all considered coins. Coins are coins. It doesn't matter. And the point is, even prutas, which are very heavily circulated and therefore wear down very easily, nevertheless, they're still considered matbeas for that purpose. When he says, "I want change for a gold dinner," the change can even include prutas, even though prutas might be very badly worn. So that's what it means. No, so he, well, that's the question we're going to get back to. So we can use this explanation, though, we can use this explanation to end for Shmuel, that case is definitely talking about monetary value. The previous cases in the Mishnah might be talking about the actual metal. Because, again, over here, since, again, according to Rashi, he's saying, I gave you a coined gold dinner, meaning I'm not so concerned about the weight of it. I'm concerned about that I gave you a gold dinner, which has I gave you a coin which has a stamp on it that shows that it's worth a gold dinner, that it circulates as that.
Right.
And therefore, you owe me that amount. So, in other words, he's talking about the value of it rather than the weight of it. And according to Tosfos and everybody else, it means that I expected to get back change in the equivalent value of that. So, therefore, obviously, he's talking about value. So that would be talking about value. In the previous case is not necessary. Okay, the Gemara says Dekanami. In fact, we can see that from the wording of the Mishnah. Because we said everything is considered one type of coin. So the point is that of that part of the Mishnah, that we're talking about the fact that different coins are interchangeable. So again, Rav Elazar will say, and Shmuel will agree to that this part is definitely talking about coins. It's definitely talking about the monetary value. Rav, what would Rav answer to that? Rav, who wanted to say that the whole Mishnah up until this point has been talking, except for the case of the litera, has been talking about monetary value. He would say, Shakol din matbeachas. He would say what the Mishnah means is not that all coins are considered to be of the same type, but rather it means that everything has the din of a coin. Regardless, all the different kinds of coins we're talking about in the Mishnah, a pruta, a tresis, a punyan, or whatever, they're all considered coins for purposes of this halacha.
And this is consistent with
how he's explaining that throughout the Mishnah we've been talking about monetary value rather than weight, except in the case of the litera.
Shmuel was explaining
some of them, many of them, as having to do with weight, with weight, with the metal, with the particular type of metal or whatever. The actual amount of metal. Whereas Rav, who says that the whole most of the Mishnah has been talking about monetary value, he'll say that the point the Mishnah is saying, Shakol din matbeachas, in all these cases that we've been learning up until this point, all these various coins that we've been talking about, they all have the din matbea. They're all interchangeable.
Rabbi Eliezer seems to agree with him.
Well, that's the question. But Rabbi Elazar, what about Rabbi Elazar? What does he hold? Are we saying that since Rabbi Elazar explains the last part of the Mishnah, the Dinar Zahav case, in a way that will fit with Shmuel's opinion, does that imply, therefore, that the Reisha he would also understand like Shmuel? That, again, the previous case is about where he says, you owe me shtei kesef, and the other guy says, I only owe you a pruta, or you owe me shtei kesef plus a pruta, and the other guy says, I owe you only a pruta. Would Rav Elazar necessarily have to agree with Shmuel in that also? And it's hard to say because, again, I was saying before, the halacha, almost everybody says, almost all of the Rishonim say that the halacha in this is like Rav. We would rather not have that Rav Elazar is going to not go according to the halacha. Yeah. The answer is loy. No. You don't have to say that Rav Elazar holds in the entire thing like Shmuel. Sefer Davka. He would say that the sefer, this part about the gold dinner, must be is specifically talking about coins, the katani, because it finishes off. Shakol min matbeyacha, because he says the whole different kinds of coins are all considered in the same category. The resha, but the earlier part, the part where it says about you owe me shtei kesef, and the other one says I only owe you a pruta, or you owe me shtei kesef plus a pruta, and the other guy says I only owe you a pruta. Those kerab or kishmul. He could be holding like Rav. He could be holding like Shmuel. We don't necessarily have a proof just because he explained the last case in the Mishnah, the case of the dinar zahav, as referring to monetary value, doesn't necessarily tell us how he explained the earlier parts of the Mishnah. He could understand them as monetary value like Rav, or he could understand them as talking about different types of metal, gold versus silver versus copper, like Shmuel.
So if that's the case, what the Chiddush really is?
Nothing. Rabbi Elazar is explaining the last part of the Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar is explaining the Dinah Zahav case. And incidentally, that helps with Shmuel's opinion. Rabbi Elazar himself was saying as an independent statement, so throughout the rest of the Mishnah, he doesn't necessarily have to be agreeing with either one of them. He could be agreeing with one, but we don't know necessarily which one. Okay. Tashma. Come, let's bring a proof again in this machlokas of Rav and Shmuel. A Braisa says, we know that Rabbi Elazar's explanation of the last part of the Mishnah helps us according to Shmuel. Rav himself would understand it similarly. Rav would understand that the whole Mishnah up to that point has been talking about monetary value. But the rest of the Mishnah, we don't know what Rabbi Elazar. Tashma. Reuben says, "Dinar zahav zehuv yesh li biyadcha." If Reuben says, "You owe me a gold dinar zehuv," which Rashi says zehuv means tavua, means that it's minted, that it has a design on it. It's a minted coin that therefore circulates with the value of a gold dinar. And dinar zahav by itself, we're going to discuss soon, may not have that meaning. Wait. So he says, "Dinar zahav zehuv yesh li biyadcha," and the other one answers, "Ein lecha biyadi ala dinar kesef." No, I only owe you a silver dinar. Chayev, then he's chayev ashvur. Now the implication: taima de amale zahav zahav. Only because he specified. Why would the other guy be chayev ashvur for moediv mikzas? Only because the first guy used the expression zahav zahuv, which implies coined money. In other words, we're talking about the value of it. We're talking about the value of it, not the fact that it's made out of gold.
The fact that we say Zahuv implies that it's because the
amount of gold in it is going to be the same whether it's coined or not, whether it's stamped or not. The stamp gives it a circulating value. It gives it a monetary value. So only because of that, only because we're talking monetary value, is it higher. But if you said Stam, right, Hostama Shava Kamale, it sounds like if he just says Dinar Zahuv without specifying, Then it means Shavakamalei. It means he's talking about the value of it. So
he's talking not about the value. If he says Zahuv, you said he's talking about the value.
No. So.
So if he's saying some.
No. So one second. So no. So what we mean is like this: when he said Rashi understands it that both Zahuv, that whether you say Zahuv or without it, You're still implying the value of it. The difference is when you say Zahuv, you're talking about specifically that I lent you a coined dinar. Don't think that I just lent you an uncoined piece of metal, and therefore if you counterclaim kesef, then it's not going to be minachayna. No, I lent you a certain amount of money in the form of a gold dinar. But even without the word Zahuv, also it would be shavah. It would mean the value.
It contradicts each other. If we add Zahu to mean value, without Zahu, it has to mean something else. It cannot mean the same thing.
Well, but for purposes of the question, we're assuming that not. That dinner, look at Rashi. Dinner Zahu, Zahu, yesh li biyadcha, ein lecha biyadi ala dinar kesef. I will pirush dinner Zahu, hainu tavua. Zahu means that stamped. That's stamped. That's minted. But timer, and the reason why the other guy is chayav for the shura, mishum da'kol min matzeya, because gold coins and silver coins are both types of coins. Therefore, he's a moed u'mitzah. Ma'kol min matzeya echon. Ha'avalim min ha'tayna. U'miyu sayayta l'rav. However, we can use this braisa as a proof for Rav. D'midi itzrich l'forushi zohov zohov. Since he had to specify the word zohov, implying coin, miklal, the implication, the masnitin, it's not dino zohov, summer, meaning that therefore when the Mishnah said dino zohov without specifying, shovakama, it meant not necessarily an actual gold dinner, but it meant the value of a gold dinner. That's the difference. In other words, dinner zohov zohov would mean I gave you an actual gold dinner. Right. No, but it is. It means an actual gold dinner, which has the value of a gold dinner. I'm not concerned with the fact that it's made out of gold. The point is, the point is I gave you a gold dinner as opposed to I gave you a handful of change that equals a gold dinner. So the Mishnah, in other words, what he's talking about, that he's saying, I gave you a handful of change that adds up to a gold dinner. And the Brisa would be talking about, I gave you one actual gold dinner. But either way, it would mean the value. Amar Ravashi. So Ravashi says, no, Hoki Kamar. No, what the Brisa means to say is, Kol Ha'im Adino Zahav, Ka'im Adino Zahav Zahav. No, it means that as soon as he says Dino Zahav, automatically, by assumption, it means Zahav Zahav. So therefore, when the other guy answers Dino Kesef, that's fine. Coins are coins. Hadami Minataina. When we say Dino Zahav, it implies the word Zahav.
So what's the point of saying Zahav then?
The point is that it means that usually,
without saying it, it means Zahav.
Because usually what it means is when a person says you owe me a gold dinner, usually he means, in other words, I gave you an actual gold dinner, not just that I gave you a bunch of change that adds up to a dinner.
So why is he adding Zahav in this case?
So the Braita is telling us that by adding the word Zohov means when you say Dino Zohov, the implication is it means Zohov. It means one gold dinner,
so
not 25 silver dinners.
Right.
For example.
So when you don't say Zohov, you will say
no. That's what we're saying. Either way, you're saying the same thing, right?
Why would you add Zohov then?
You could be. You could add Zohov to clarify, but you could do it to clarify that you meant. You could be doing it to clarify that's what you meant.
Okay.
Now,
you're saying it's a minted.
Right. Now, many of the other Rishonim, including Tosfos, have a different Girsa over here, that when he says Dino Zahav Zahu, then he's Potter. And therefore, so Tosfos understands that the vote would be, when he says Dino Zahav Zahu, that it would mean just the opposite of the way Rashi says. It would mean that if he says Zahu, and since we're saying the implication, then it would mean he means actual
metal.
Gold. It means the actual metal of gold, as opposed to the other guy counterclaiming silver, and therefore he's Potter. Therefore, that's the thing. We would understand, therefore, according to that, it would mean in the Mishnah, therefore, when he says Dino Zahav Libyarcha, it would usually mean the equivalent of saying Zahav. It would be the equivalent of you owe me X amount of gold,
right.
Weight of gold, that is, not value. And therefore, if the guy counterclaims silver, he's potter. Only if, again, that's why Tosfos understands before, that Kshatane B'dinu Matbeis doesn't mean that he tainted that I lent you a gold dinner. That means that I gave you a gold dinner telling you to bring back the change, meaning I'm looking at it from the point of view of its monetary value. That's equivalent to 25 silver dinner and whatever. And in Shulchan Aruch, it passes according to that. That if a person says, Dinner Zahav, by assumption, it means that he's saying you owe me X amount of gold. And therefore, if the other guy counterclaims silver, he will be potter. He would have to say that you owe me the value of a dinner zahav in order for then if the other guy counterclaims dinner kesef, then he would be chayav. That's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. Okay.
He would have to
explicitly say that you owe me the value of a gold dinner. If he just said a gold dinner, again, according to Tosfos' Girsa and understanding over here, it would mean he means actual gold, and therefore if the other guy says, I only owe you silver, no, sure.
He's not
the value of a gold, and the other guy says, I only owe you silver, then it's Mimina Taina, because coins are coins. Then he'd have to swear around. Okay. Yeah. The Machaber, yeah. Tony Rabchia Vasayuri de Rav, so Rabchia Torah Braisa, which supports Rav's opinion in this whole discussion. If the one person says, Sela Libyotcha, you owe me a Sela, and the other one answers, Ein Lecha B'yadei Alach Sela Chosa Beis Kesef, the other one answers, I only owe you a Sela minus two Ma, Chayev. Chosa Ma.
So that confirms Ravashi.
That confirms Rav.
Yeah. Rav and Ravashi.
Well, okay.
He says that
No, well, here we didn't say a seller is a silver coin, so we're not talking about that. But if he says I owe you a seller minus one ma, then it would be potter because you don't have. Again, according to Rab, you need the kfira, the denial has to be two full ma's, and you don't have that here. So therefore, this braisa of Rav Chiya is clearly according to Rab, not according to Shmuel. And again, that is why almost all of the Rishonim passed in like Rab in this. Even though we have a usual rule in Dinei Mamonos, we usually follow Shmuel, but here we have an explicit braisa according to Rav, then we follow that. Okay. Further discussion on this. Omer of Nachum Vayitzchok Amar Shmuel. Lo shonu elabatainas malva v'hadas loive. All of this that we're talking about, there has to be a minimum amount that he denies and a minimum amount that he admits in order to be chayev for a shvua is only when we're talking about that you just have claims and counterclaims between the malva and the loiva. Abel tainas malva v'hadas edechad. But if you have Reuven, the malva is claiming, and there's not Shimon is not and Shimon is counterclaiming, but Reuven has one aid on his side that Shimon owes him this amount. Before we talk about there's no aid. Before we're talking about the Malva and Loiva, no aid. Now we're saying there's one aid. I feel like Tana, Elabit Prota, Chayev. Then even if Reuven is only claiming you owe me a Prota, then he would still be Chayev a Shavuot.
One aid?
Yeah, my timer. Why is that? Because the Pasuk says, L'yokum Eidachav V'ish L'chol Oven L'chol Chatas. The Pasuk says that one aid cannot stand up against a person for any Avera or for any Oven, for any, or L'chol Chatas, for any Avera or for any punishment. In other words, one aid is not enough to convict, implying l'chol oven l'chol chatas u'dein ikam, implying that one aid is not enough when it is not enough to actually make the guy have to pay, or to punish him or whatever. L'chol oven l'chol chatas avo kam hu l'shvua. However, one aid is enough to make him have to swear, and there you don't have. And there you don't have any minimum amounts, because it doesn't say kasef or kalim, from which we learned two kasef before. So therefore it applies. Therefore the usual rule applies that a din tarda can be even for a prutta. Din prutta can din. Yeah, as long as you have one aid. So if Reuven has one aid that Shimon owes him a prutta, and Shimon denies it, he will have to swear. V'tanya, and we learn in the braisa, kol makom sheshnayim machayv inayse mamon. As a general rule, whenever there were two edim, they would be machayv him to pay. Edachem machayv a shvur. That if there's only one aid, instead he makes him liable to a shvur. So in this case, had there been two edim that Shimon owes that prutta, he would have to pay that prutta. No questions asked. Therefore, if there's one aid, it means that Shimon has to swear. Again, no questions asked.
But when you have one aid, you
have to swear. So if Shimon is willing to swear that he doesn't owe that prutta, then he'll be potter. But if he's not willing to swear, then he'll have to pay. Yeah. Tosfos points out that strictly speaking, it's not necessarily a hard and fast rule. You do have the case where a person denies a claim involving money, where a claim involving land, I should say. Where again, if you have two aidim, no question, he's going to have to return the land. But if there's one, you don't swear on claims involving land, as we discussed before.
Right.
But with that exception, so that's it. You don't. So therefore, he's potter from Shavuot. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, midrabanan. Okay, you'd have a Shavuot hesed maybe, but yeah. V'omer Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. Then Rav Nachman says in the name of Shmuel, another din. Tana chitin usorin. If Reuven claims that you owe, we discussed that we had this incidentally in the Gemara before, so now we're dealing with it in a little more detail. If Reuven claims you owe me chitim and sorin, wheat and barley, v'hoydolay v'achaman, and Shimon admits that I owe you one of those, I owe you wheat or I owe you barley, then he's chayev the shvur because his admission is of the same type as part of the claim.
Wait a minute, we said
chitin v'hoydolay v'sorin. We said if Reuven claims wheat and Shimon counterclaims barley, then he's potter. But here, Reuven is claiming wheat and barley. And Shimon says, I only owe you wheat, or I only owe you barley. Then he's chayev. No. See, chitim and sorin are different species.
So why is it chayev?
Because it's chayev because he's admitting on one of them. He's admitting, I owe you wheat. So he's denying barley, but he's admitting, you claim that you... Mishpatayna, yeah. Yeah, Mr. Taina, you owe me ten bushels of wheat and 10 bushels of barley. No, I only owe you 5 bushels of wheat. So he's motive mixed with Amelia. Yeah. I'm a little bit.
You owe me gold and silver, 10 of gold and 10 of silver. No, you owe me 10 of silver.
Yeah.
You're higher.
Amalei Rav Yitzchak Yishar. So Rav Yitzchak tells him, Yishar, well done, Yashar Koyach. V'chein Amar Rav Yechanan, and Rav Yechanan said the same thing, as you're saying, Shmuel. So now when we say Rav Yechanan said this, the implication is, who usually argues as Rav Yechanan? The Shlokish. Does that mean that Klal the Polygale Rav Shlokish? Does that mean that Rav Shlokish necessarily disagrees with Rav Yechanan on that point? If Rav Yitzchak has to point out, very good, Rav Yechanan said the same thing. The implication is not everybody agrees with that, but you have Rav Yechanan on your side. So what is it? Ikad Amri Mishahav Ashotilei Vashotiklei. Some explain that what it is like this. Rish Lakish, Rashi says, when Rabbi Yechanan would say something in this medrash, Rish Lakish, out of Derech Eretz for Rabbi Yechanan, would wait until Rabbi Yechanan had finished saying his point, and then he would argue, if he had what to argue about. And so Misha have a Shahilei, he would wait for him, the Shahilei, and meanwhile he would be quiet. So now what happened is, maybe Rabbi Yitzchak meanwhile left the Bis Medrash, after Rabbi Yechanan had said his point, or while he was in the middle of saying his point or whatever, before Rish Lakish had a chance to respond. So we don't know, therefore. So maybe Rabbi Yitzchak didn't know whether Rish Lakish argued or not. So he's saying, Yishav v'cheinom Rabbi Yechanan, implying maybe Rish Lakish doesn't agree with you, but at least Rabbi Yechanan does. But maybe we're saying Rabbi Yitzchak himself may not be sure whether Rish Lakish even disagreed on it or not. Another version of what happened is that Rish Lakish was taking a drink at the time when Rabbi Yechanan said this. So again, he had to finish drinking before he spoke up. So again, Rabbi Yitzchak left in the middle while Rabbi Yechanan was saying, and Rish Lakish hadn't spoken. In other words, according to the second version, maybe Rish Lakish would not normally wait until Rabbi Yechanan finished before interjecting with his opinion. But in this case, he happened to be taking a drink. And therefore, meanwhile, Rabbi Yitzchak left, and he doesn't know, therefore, what Rish Lakish said, or if Rish Lakish said anything at all.
He shouldn't have left.
Well, okay, but he had to leave for one reason or another. Maybe he had to go to the bathroom. I don't know, whatever. Okay. So, Lema Messiah, fine. Can we say that the following thing from our Mishnah supports Shmuel's opinion and Rabbi Yechanan's opinion? We said in the Mishnah, Taneh Chitim Behoda Lebesod, and we said that if Reuven claims you owe me wheat, and Shimon counterclaims I only owe you barley, we said he's potter from a Shmua, Ram Gamliel Machayev, whereas Ram Gamliel said he's Chayev. The implication being, Taimah the Taneh Chitim Behoda Lebesod, and why would the Tanakhama say that he's potter? Only because the Taina and the Haidah are two different things. One's wheat, one's barley. Ha Chitim Lebesod, and implying that if Reuven had claimed wheat and barley, Behoda Lebechaman, and Shimon had admitted on one of them, Sounds like he would be chayev. So you can see it from the wording of the Mishnah itself.
No. You wouldn't bring in Hiddush.
Just the opposite. The Mishnah is telling us the case where Tane Chitin V'Hodolei Besodin, where even then Ram Gamliel says you're chayev, but we would infer from that the Tanakhama would say, why you potter in this case? Because Chitin versus Sodin. But if it was Chitin V'Sodin versus Sodin, then you would be chayev. Even the Tanakhama would say you're chayev. The answer is loy. Not necessarily these can be understood in Mishnah that way. Who are din dafkei l'chitin v'sarin nami potter? You could argue that maybe even if he claimed chitin and sarin, and the other guy counterclaimed only sarin, maybe that Abanan would say he's potter. Why would the Mishnah present the argument only in the case of chitin? Maybe just in order to tell you how far Ram Gamliel goes with his opinion, that even where the hajar is not at all maybe not finer, he would still say you're chayav. You owe me gold, I only owe you silver, then Rabbi Gamliel would still say Yechayiv even there. How much more so that Rabbi Gamliel would say Yechayiv in the case where it was gold and silver, and he says, I only owe you silver. But not necessarily, we can infer from the Mishnah, the Chachamim would say you'd be Chayiv in that second case, but maybe not, maybe they'd say you're potter in that case also.
But wouldn't the Mishnah be careful to not let you think that that's going to be the case?
No, that's the thing, the Mishnah might be telling us that the Mishnah might be telling us how far Ram Gamliel goes in being Mechayiv from a Shavua. That the Rabbanon are saying he's Potter, there's not that much of a Chiddush that a person is Potter from a Shavua. There are many cases where a person is Potter from a Shavua. That he should be Chayiv, that he should have to make a Shavua with Nekitas Chayfetz and all that we talked about yesterday, holding a Sefer Torah, etc. We want to show how far Ram Gamliel goes with that.
Why is it so easy to make him Shavua?
Why?
Because we said that making him Shavua is a very big...
Okay, thing. Understood, but Ram Gamliel still holds that's a case that would still be considered Moedim Mitzvah.
We don't know why.
But, no, he has his opinion. I mean, we have the opinion of Admon in the Mishnah also, which, yeah. Okay. Toshma, come, let's try to bring a proof from another part. The Mishnah, we learned also in our Mishnah, Tana Kalem. What?
Well, there was that also, right? No,
the Shavuot D'Oraisa. Before the Shavuot D'Oraisa. No, only a Shavuot D'Rabbanan can say that instead of me swearing and being potter, you can swear and you'll collect. But that only works with Shavuot D'Rabbanan. Yeah. Okay, Toshma, the Mishnah continued. Tana Kalim v'Karkaris. We have the case if Reuben claims that you're only X amount of Kalim as well as X amount of Karka. We said if Shimon admits I do owe you the Kalim, but he denies the Karka, or the Karkaris for Kafa the Kalim, or he agrees that I owe you the Karka, but he denies the Kalim, then he's Potter from the Shavua. But Hoyd of Mikhtas Karkaris Potter, right, because there's no Shavua and Karka. Hoyd of Mikhtas Karkaris Potter. We said if he admits that he owes some of the Karka, he's still Potter, because you never make a Shavua on Karka. So therefore, being Moidan, it also doesn't bring you to a Shavua. The Mikhtas Kalim Chayev, but if he admits the part of the Kalim, he'd be Chayev. Through Gilgul Shavua, he will be Chayev on the Karka as well. So again, let's analyze that. Taima de Kalim Karkaris, why are we saying he's Potter in the first case? Because of the claim of Kalim and Karka, the Karka la Bashvori, because Karka is not something that you swear on, unless by Gilgul Shavua. Ha Kalim de Kalim Dumya de Kalim Karkaris Chayev. It sounds like, though, if he were to say, now, Kalim and Karka are obviously two different kind of things. They're the equivalent of Chitin and Tzoder. And they were saying he's Potter because one of the things is Karka. But the implication is, if it were a case of two different sets of Kalim, where he admits one and denies the other, it sounds like he'd be Chayev. Because the only reason he's Potter in the first case is the Karka. So that would work. So again, that would work according to. So that seems to fit with Shmuel's opinion. But
that we're talking about
that Shmuel has said that. So Reuven says, for example, you owe me cups and plates.
And Shimon says, no, I only owe you plates.
Shimon was saying he's chayim. On the face of it, our Mishnah seems to be implying that as well. And in that case, why? What's Shmuel's chiddush? The answer is no. Again, who are dinned after the kalim nami potter? No, you could argue that the Mishnah might be saying that if it was two separate sets of kalim, he would still be potter, even though he admitted on one of them. The hodik is only kalim v'karkoi. The chiddush, when the Mishnah is mentioning kalim and karka, the kamash malon, the chiddush of it is the kihodu mixes kalim, that if he's moda on some of the kalim, chayav afal akakos, then he will be chayav to swear on the karka also. Even though you don't normally swear on karka, but here you will because of Gilgul Shavua.
Even if he
admits on some of the kalim, and therefore he's chayav to swear on the rest of the kalim, he will then have to make a Shavua on karka through Gilgul Shavua.
Nothing to do with ready.
Nothing to do with two separate sets of kalim, right? So the question is, my kamash malon, zoikakin. So in that case, what's the chiddush of the Mishnah? The concept of zoikakin that you can have, that you can swear on karka through Gilgul Shavua. Tanena, we learn a Mishnah and kiddushin to that effect. Zoikakin as anachosim sheyesh la nachrayus lishava alein. We say explicitly there that nachosim that metaltlin can bring about that nachosim sheyesh la nachrayus, namely karka, they have to swear on them. So we know we learned in kiddushin. So what's the chiddush of our Mishnah? The answer is okay, but still, ha'ikr, here in Shavuos is the main place where we talk about these dinim. There it's only as an incidental thing, because the Mishnah is talking about over there in Kiddushin, talking about different dinim that do and don't apply to Karka. So incidentally, in that list of things, it mentions that. But still, it's talking about Kiddushin, actually. It's talking about the point is, it's still reasonable enough that our Mishnah might be telling us this, because here in Shavuos is the main place to talk about these dinim, and therefore the Mishnah wants to stress to us that there is a case where you could end up swearing on Karka, namely by Gilgul Shavuot. But you could still argue, and that you could still understand the Mishnah that way, and therefore not necessarily that the Mishnah will prove Shmuel's point.
We'll
see you tomorrow, Hashem.